One More Jump by Victor McConnell. The length of Frank's pre-show walks had grown, though the change occurred so gradually he hadn't noticed. Before setting out, he lifted each thigh to his chest, trying to loosen knees and hips. A breeze was strengthening from the west, and low clouds hung heavy with no hills to hold them up. Frank walked past the battered wagons and worn-down motor car that carried them from town to town. He'd never been granted the honor of driving, and he paused at the driver's side, reaching in and running his hand along the cracked leather wheel. He continued on to Main Street, passing the church, the saloon, and the handful of shops and clapboard houses. He stopped just past the general store, inside of the cotton fields that abutted the edge of town. They would be picked bare soon enough, but for now they lay unblemished. It was a Saturday afternoon, and Frank figured that everyone would have gathered in the town center for the show by now. Yet he could make out the hunched back of one picker in the distance, canvas sack slung over his shoulder as he moved slowly through the rows of the otherwise empty field. The figure looked as his father had when he'd watched from his bedroom window. His father worked until nightfall, until Frank's mother called out that supper was ready two or three times. Seeing the solitary picker from afar reminded Frank of the day of his first significant jump, an afternoon when his mother had gone to town for supplies and his father was outside. Frank was 6 years old and supposed to be sweeping. Bored, he'd suddenly remembered the half-smoked Sunday cigar that his father kept above the kitchen door jamb. Even after dragging a chair beneath the door, the cigar remained well out of reach. Fear of the forbidden made him act quickly. After a few leaps, his fingertips grazed it and it bounced to the floor, sending a thin spray of tobacco across the wooden boards. Frank quickly swept up the reddish-brown dust and carried it out on the front porch, dumping it in the dirt. He scanned the field until he saw his father still focused on the soil. Frank planted himself in his father's rocking chair and struck a match, feeling very much like a man. He sucked in, and his throat seared, and he thought the smoke was disintegrating his insides. He hacked, expecting some piece of lung to come out. When he could breathe again, he decided the cigar wasn't for him and scrambled back onto the chair in the kitchen. He tried to return it to the door jamb, but even when he jumped high and focused on the moment of stillness at the apogee, it kept rolling off. He was sweating with effort when the screen door creaked open. Frank felt panic in his chest, realizing he'd forgotten to look up the road to see if his mother was approaching in the wagon. He breathed and gathered himself for one last attempt. He flexed his knees, springing and arching his back, straining for extra height. For all his effort, he soared a little higher than he had on his previous jump and thudded to the ground in failure. His mother wondered aloud at the noise, calling his name. He suddenly felt stupid. He could have stacked things up on the chair to reach the door jamb instead of jumping. With a surge of shame, he stood and jumped without thought or hesitation, placing the cigar with ease above the door landing, then lifting the chair and setting it back by the kitchen table. He picked up the broom from where it leaned against the sink, just as his mother entered the room. Frank looked at his timepiece and realized he needed to make his way back. He'd been leaning against a post outside the general store, and when he turned to go, he almost bumped into a man that was hurrying past.
"Fire?" Frank said.
"What's that?"
"Nothing, just what's the hurry?"
The man smiled. "Ah, got caught up closing the store, and now I'm liable to be late for today's show. I don't want to miss any of it. It's a rule of mine to not be late, you know."
"That's a good rule to have."
"It's one that stood me in good stead. I often leave early, but I ain't late. Two go hand in hand, you know. Better to leave something a bit early than to get to the next place late."
The man saw Frank looking at him.
"I ain't been even close to late in a while now. Don't go thinking I plan to make a habit of it."
"I didn't think it. And I reckon you got plenty of time. I'm one of the performers, and I'm not there yet."
The man seemed suspicious, as if Frank would lie about such a thing.
"Your face don't seem familiar. What's your act?"
Frank considered how to answer. He didn't really think of it as an act.
"I don't want to spoil anything. You'll see soon enough."
The man shrugged and hurried off a little faster than before. Frank trailed along behind him, turning before they reached the crowd, winding his way toward the troop tent and settling himself on his empty wooden crate. The surface was worn smooth, and the boards flexed beneath him and seemed on the verge of cracking. He closed his eyes and leaned his head back against the canvas. A pair of boots scratched to a halt in the dirt, and he waited to be addressed. It was rare that someone sought him out when he was off by himself.
Neither the boots nor the person wearing them made a sound, and Frank waited before cracking his eyelids. It was Mordecai, the show's new magician. Frank looked up at the young, freckled face as Mordecai fiddled with one of the straps on his faded suspenders, cinching it tight and pulling it up toward his collarbone. Even after being tightened, the strap slid a few inches down the boy's thin shoulders. Frank didn't think he looked a day past 16. Mordecai still said nothing. "Well, can I help you, kid?"
"Don't know. Milton told me you wasn't busy and that you might could."
Frank waited. Mordecai finally continued.
Sorry, I didn't aim to bother you. I'm pretty sure I can figure things out anyhow."
"I didn't say I was bothered, and I didn't say I wouldn't help. But we don't got all day, so come on out with it."
The sun had eased out from behind the clouds, and Frank lifted a hand above his brow, shielding the brightness so as to better see Mordecai.
"Well, Milton told me no magician worth his salt does magic without a bow tie. He ain't told me that when I signed on. I might not have done it if I'd known I have to dress up."
"What's your point? I don't have a bow tie."
"I got a bow tie that Milton gave me. Thing is, though, I just don't know how to tie it."
Mordecai paused for a moment.
And I asked Milton, but he sent me over here."
Frank thought maybe the others were playing a joke on him.
"Kid, why would I know how to tie a tie? They don't make a cheerleader dress up like that."
The boy brushed at some unseen dust on his shirt sleeve.
"Like I said, I don't know. I didn't figure you could or couldn't, but I was just going on what Milton said, and I figured I could ask because it didn't look like you was doing much."
"Well, you can't always judge on looks." The boy stayed quiet and stood his ground. Frank pulled out a small gold watch from a sewn canvas pocket on the breast of his overalls. "Show starts in 10 minutes. You shouldn't be bothering folks so soon before, no matter who tells you what. But it doesn't appear that I got a choice in helping you." Frank breathed out and rose up off his box. "I ain't tied a bow before, but let's see if we can't puzzle through it." Mordecai offered a low thanks and pulled the crumpled tie from his pocket. Frank had seen one tied a couple times, and he helped the young magician fumble and twist the bit of silk until it bore some resemblance to a bow. "You got everything else ready?"
"Yep," the boy said. "I can do any trick there is."
He paused, his young face crinkling in a half grin.
"I mean, as long as they don't ask me to tie no ties."
Frank smiled when he realized the boy was expecting him to laugh. "Fair enough. You best head on, do a final check. I got some of my own thinking to do before the show."
"All right."
The boy turned to go, paused as if to ask another question, and then went on. Frank watched until he disappeared around the corner of the tent, back toward the bustle. He was their third magician in the last 6 months. The most recent one had been kicked out after several shows made it clear that he couldn't perform a tenth of the tricks he'd claimed. And the one before that had been too good. He'd left their troupe when he was offered a better-paying gig with a show that stayed in the cities. Frank couldn't remember having trouble finding a stable magician in years past and wondered what had changed. A few seconds after Mordecai disappeared, a sharp crack rang out, followed by the tinkling sound of falling glass. Frank stood and saw that the trick shooter was already warming up the crowd, tossing glass balls high in the air and exploding them from his hip with a revolver. The crowd didn't know that the pistol was loaded with birdshot, so that hitting the balls was no special feat. Frank heard Milton call out that the next act would be starting soon and for everyone to set up where they had a good view. Frank sat down and rubbed his legs, flexing them outward several times. The plains in front of him were already brown and dry from early summer heat. This day was cool, though, and Frank slowly settled into a sedative calm, his memory circling back again to the day when he smoked his father's cigar. He'd long pondered whether his parents had known, having initially believed that he fooled them. His mother said nothing upon seeing him sweating while sweeping, and his father said nothing that Sunday about a more used-up cigar. As the years passed, however, Frank found himself thinking that they had known, but it allowed him to get away with it. He was never sure exactly why, and he sometimes thought that they realized how high he'd jumped and hadn't wanted to punish him for being such a marvel. Milton announced the juggler, and Frank stretched his stiff knees one last time and ambled slowly around the backside of the crowd. Once he was close enough, he could see the juggler concluding his performance by allowing the crowd to heave objects up onto the platform, which he would snatch out of the air and seamlessly meld into his routine. When he finished, he was tossing up his original three juggling balls, a felt hat, a boot, a baseball, an egg, in a rusted tin coffee cup. He feigned losing control, staggering forward and sending the objects one by one back to their proper owners in the crowd. Frank watched the baseball head up out of his hand and then smoothly down into the outstretched arms of a small boy in the front row. The boy held the ball aloft as the people around offered their congratulations. When the egg arced toward its owner, a slightly built woman in the second row, tension swelled in the crowd at the expectation of her covered in yolk. But she cradled it softly and slipped it into a pocket in her dress. The juggler bowed and trotted off the wooden platform as Milton stepped up, clad in secondhand slacks, a tweed jacket, and a white ruffled shirt.
"Yes, yes, ladies and gents, a round of cheers for our juggling marvel. I would allow no one to follow such an act save one. Luckily for us, that one is here. He's a man who spent more of his life off the ground than on it, a man who can defy the undefiable, gravity. And I tell you this, if the Wright brothers had come a few decades later, then our man here would be credited with the first human flight. Don't believe me? Well, I never claimed that my words do him justice. I'll allow you to see for yourselves. One of our longest-running performers, the legendary leaper, Frank W. Lexington."
Frank took the stage and bowed to the crowd, fixing his eyes on his feet as if preparing them to jump. The stage was nothing more than 2x4s on wooden rafters laid crosswise above the dry, black dirt. The beams were lashed and nailed together to hold them steady. Atop the platform, two outward-facing chairs stood on opposite sides of a 4-foot-long table. One of the table legs was too short, and someone had stuffed a rag under it so it wouldn't rattle. The crowd formed a semicircle around the flat ground on which the display was erected. A few children were perched on their parents' shoulders. Frank did not stretch or meditate or gesticulate to the crowd, nor did he shake his head doubtfully at the setup. He just glanced at the chairs with an air of disdain, then knelt and ceremonially retied the leather on his shoes. He wore boot soles, but had removed the actual boot. In its place was a soft rawhide wrapping that he slipped over his foot and fastened to his ankle with stiff, cracked leather from an old mule harness. Over the years, Frank had heard countless crowds comment on his shoes, deriding him for being able to afford nothing better, or asserting that he couldn't be the real Frank Lexington with such shoes, or claiming the shoes to be spring-loaded after seeing him jump. With his shoes fastened, Frank stood and felt the collective gaze. He could hear the murmuring of bets between men regarding his chances. He broke into movement, 4 or 5 bounds, and he rose up off the creaking boards and glided above the chairs and table. He landed in a crouch, then stood straight and bowed his small bow. The crowd cheered.
"Put something else on up there. Hellfire, I could have cleared that," someone called out.
Shouts of agreement followed, and two small boys who traveled with the show's extra hands dragged 2 more chairs across the stage. They set these as bookends to the existing arrangement and then scurried off to watch. Frank was smiling slightly. The crowd took it for confidence, and the wagers were almost all in his favor. This pleased him, and he stood poised on the balls of his feet, looking as though he were barely on the ground at all. The wagering stopped as Frank jogged forward and flew over the chairs and table. He was feeling good now, light and smooth. The jumping felt easier than it had in ages. He crouched low on the stage, listening to the banter and waiting for the two boys to set up the next obstacle. He wondered why he felt so light today. He'd always tried to discover the reasons behind such a feeling and never could. Something he ate, something he thought or heard. The cause seemed a mystery, which had always frustrated him. He didn't like the idea that it was just randomness. He hadn't had a day like this in a long time, and it occurred to him that he needed to unearth the cause before his chances ran out. The boys set a chair on top of the table, and Frank fell into his routine, squatting and staring at the setup in disbelief. He waited for the crowd's response and shook his head in apparent resignation. In the old days, Frank often shed his shoes and jumped this height barefoot, particularly when the crowd heckled him about his footwear. But his heels had become sensitive to the jarring landings, and he'd given up barefoot jumping the previous autumn. Yet he felt so light on this day that he considered slipping off his shoes and going for it. At the edge of his vision, Frank caught sight of the other performers coming out to see his jumps. He never really felt as though his performance had begun until they were watching. And it pleased him that over the years his jumping had not grown old, that more of them came out to watch Frank than any of the other shows. Perhaps because his performance was real, not illusion, and there was something at risk.
He spotted Mordecai amongst them, and he nodded when the young magician met his stare. The two boys who'd set up the chair vacated the stage, and Frank exhaled and prepared himself. The crowd waited. Frank finally sprang into motion just when he thought that neither he nor the crowd could continue to bear the stillness. He leapt off his left foot and flagged his right out in front of him in the air. As he approached the chair, he had a moment of worry. Had he taken it too lightly? He couldn't remember whether he'd even tried to jump high. He arched his back and his toe almost skimmed the chair, but he landed cleanly and turned and bowed to the crowd and began to walk off the platform. Voices cried out that this man could jump anything. Someone even suggested that he jump the general store. Milton rushed to the stage. "Thank you, ladies and gents, thank you. I believe our frog-legged friend has another jump in him. What do you think? Can he pull his magic one more time?" Frank shook his head, but everyone watching wanted to see a final jump, and they called out as much to Milton. "Very well. We will need a volunteer to sit in the chair," Milton said, looking out at the people. Everyone looked at the chair on top of the table, already shoulder height to the jumper. Their faith in his ability seemed to waver now that they had to stake themselves upon it. Someone suggested a short person would be safest, and the mothers of children in the front row pulled them back and forbade them to volunteer. The tallest men in town shrunk down when others called out that it should be a big man up there so that it could be seen how high this fellow can really jump. Finally, an average-sized, balding man raised a hand. It was the hurried man. Milton bowed and complimented the volunteer for his bravery. He led him to the chair and assured all of his safety, saying that Frank Lexington had not missed a jump in over a decade and was not likely to start now. When the hurried man sat in the chair, his head and neck added about 2 feet to the overall height. He was smiling and waving at the crowd as if part of a parade. Frank caught his attention, and the man nodded in recognition. Frank thought he detected more respect in the man's gaze than he'd felt when they met earlier that day. The volume of the crowd's wagering grew, suggesting more doubt about this final jump. The hurried man turned from Frank toward the crowd. "Every person I hear who bets on me getting kicked square in the forehead is getting charged double from here on at the store." The crowd laughed, and someone said that it seemed like his prices had always been double. Frank began pacing off his steps, and the ripples of talking smoothed out. He marked a spot a full stride back from where he stood the previous time. He didn't want to take off too early or too late. The hurried man wouldn't understand. You must jump at just the right time. Neither early nor late is good enough. The blood flowed through Frank's legs as he squatted down and bounced up into his ready position. He suddenly broke into a lope and saw the fear spread across the man's face. A few feet in front of the first chair, he lifted off and headed upwards. He sailed over the first few chairs and it felt calm and easy. Gravity seemed to kick in all of a sudden, though, from nowhere. Frank could sense his height decreasing and he fought it, watching his front foot approach the man's head. They were about to collide and he twisted his ankle 6 inches to the left at the last moment. With this small move to the side, he was able to sail cleanly past, and he landed in a half somersault roll and then stood, raising his arms toward the applause. He listened for some signal that they'd noticed his deception. It sounded no different than before, only a little louder, in celebration of a jump that was a little higher. They didn't know. As Frank gave a final exaggerated bow, Milton ushered the hurried man off the stage. The man must have squeezed his eyes shut during the jump, else he'd surely have seen Frank's foot pass to the side, surely have known of Frank's failure and would have called it out. Frank stood in a daze, absently waving while the boys cleared the obstacles and Milton introduced the next performer. Up next was the magician, and Frank felt a pang of regret that he couldn't stay and watch the kid. He looked across the platform toward Mordecai, who was staring at Frank while waiting for Milton to finish his introduction. The kid's eyes were pinched a little, and his head was tilted to the side as if he were puzzling over something. He somehow seemed less youthful. Frank broke eye contact and dropped his head. When he looked back up, Mordecai appeared disappointed. Frank mouthed good luck, waved again, and descended into the crowd. The canvas flapped in the wind as Frank entered and quickly swept his things into a small rucksack. He considered leaving a note for the others, but decided against it. What was there to say? His old crate he left in place behind the tent, figuring someone else might squeeze some more use out of it. He stood still for a moment, looking about and wondering if he'd forgotten anything. Then he set off down a thin dirt path that paralleled Main Street. Dusk was beginning to fall, and Frank wondered if the cotton picker he'd seen earlier had already gone to his house for supper. The field wasn't visible from the path he was on, though, and he fixed his gaze a few yards in front of him, realizing he'd have to watch close to keep from stumbling into a pothole in the fading light.